How Beijing Turns Data into State Control. This is a segment of a six-part series analyzing how the Chinese regime conducts its modern influence operations. Read part 1 here, part 2 here, and part 3 here. Commentary. The decisive moment in China's surveillance state is when the Chinese Communist Party turns a data point into permission, permission to visit, question, intimidate, detain, educate, or coerce. By the time an alert reaches an official screen, the system has already converted ambiguity into instruction. An anomaly becomes suspicion. Suspicion becomes justification. That is the logic of proof by dashboard. It is not proof in the democratic sense. It does not require open evidence, adversarial review, judicial scrutiny, or public accountability. It requires a machine-generated reason that provides the state procedural confidence to act. In China's system, the dashboard not only organizes information, but it also manufactures political permission. This matters because China's surveillance model is not passive observation. It is an operating model for coercion. It turns daily life into data, data into suspicion, suspicion into bureaucratic tasking, and tasking into pressure. Sometimes the pressure is dramatic: detention, interrogation, forced return, or political indoctrination. More often, it is quieter: a police visit, a warning to an employer, pressure on a family member, or a demand to explain a relationship. The machine does not have to be right, only provide a reason. Xinjiang's lesson: suspicion as a production line. Xinjiang remains the clearest window into how this machinery works. Human Rights Watch's reverse engineering of a Xinjiang police app linked to the integrated joint operations platform showed a system designed to collect personal information, flag people as suspicious, and push investigative assignments back to police. The human rights group also reported mass arbitrary detention, forced political indoctrination, restrictions on movement, and religious repression against Uyghurs and other Turkic Muslims. That is where the Chinese regime system crosses from surveillance into persecution. The issue is not whether every flag is accurate. The system is built to find reasons. A checkpoint scan, device switch, religious practice, unusual trip, foreign contact, or missing data point can become an alert inside a workflow that rewards action. Suspicion becomes a production line. The state need not prove dangerous intent. It can simply claim that the platform detected a risk. This reverses the burden of proof to the citizen, who must explain the anomaly. The official only has to follow the alert. In a free society, state power is supposed to justify itself before it acts. In China's coercive architecture, the person must justify himself after the system has already marked him. When the database watches daily life, Western readers often imagine surveillance as something that happens mainly through cameras. The stronger evidence points to something broader and more invasive, a composite picture of daily life that can be queried, scored, fused, and operationalized. Even a household's power use can become a proxy for presence or absence. A gas purchase can become a mobility signal. A phone's apps and contacts can become a map of association and intent. Once fused, these signals form a risk narrative. The dashboard becomes an administrative warrant. As an example, the State Department's 2024 Human Rights Report states that genocide and crimes against humanity occurred in China against predominantly Muslim Uyghurs and other ethnic and religious minorities. This is not modernization, it is authoritarianism with better instrumentation. The coercion loop. Once alerts become normal output, coercion shifts from spectacle to management. The first stage is state contact: a visit, a warning, an interview, a demand to explain a trip, or an instruction to hand over a device. The goal is to pull the person back into the state's line of sight and remind everyone nearby that the line exists. The second stage is anticipatory obedience. People adjust to avoid scrutiny. They gather less, speak less, travel less, pray less, call abroad less, and complain less. They reduce risk by reducing freedom. A system like this does not need to detain everyone to control everyone. It needs people to internalize the possibilities. The third stage is legitimacy through procedure. A police stop becomes following up on an alert. A pressure visit becomes conducting checks. A detention becomes addressing risk. The machine's output need not be accurate to be consequential. It only needs to offer a reason. Tibet's warning, the template travels. Xinjiang is the sharp end of the spear, but the architecture does not stay regional. Tibet offers a second window into the pattern. Tibet Watch has reported compulsory installation of China's National Anti-Fraud Center app in Tibetan areas, describing it as part of a larger surveillance network. Free Tibet's reporting on the same project described a big data policing platform that aggregates data from public security bureau systems into a central Oracle database. That matters because Tibet shows Xinjiang is not an exception. It is a template. The target is social visibility. Once a community is made fully legible to the CCP, descent, religion, identity, foreign contact, and cultural loyalty can all be treated as risk indicators. A monastery, a family network, a phone, a song, a trip, or a message can become part of the same coercive file. When the system follows people overseas, the same coercive logic does not stop at China's borders. Xinjiang shows the internal architecture. Tibet shows the model's portability. Beijing's overseas pressure campaigns show the ambition. The CCP wants its coercive reach to follow Chinese citizens, dissidents, minorities, and expatriates wherever they live. The U.S. Department of Justice's case involving an undeclared Chinese police station in Lower Manhattan is a warning sign. Federal prosecutors said Xi Jinping pleaded guilty in December 2024 to conspiring to act as an illegal Chinese agent in connection with opening and operating an undeclared overseas police station for China's Ministry of Public Security. The case shows how Beijing's policing model can be laundered through community organizations, administrative services, and informal networks. Where the dashboard cannot directly command, the CCP looks for proxies. Operation Fox Hunt makes the pattern clearer. DOJ said in Xuanzhou was sentenced in 2025 for acting as an illegal Chinese agent in a scheme to cause the coerced repatriation of a U.S. resident. The method was not a lawful extradition through the courts. It was pressure, intimidation, and covert influence designed to make the target return to China. Family leverage is central. Former FBI Director Christopher Wray warned that some Operation Fox Hunt targets had relatives arrested or imprisoned in China, effectively holding family members hostage until the target returned. That is not normal law enforcement. It is transnational repression. Identify the target, activate proxies, threaten the family, and treat compliance as validation of the state's claim. The counterargument fails. Beijing presents these systems as tools of public safety, anti-fraud work, counterterrorism, or anti-corruption enforcement. That defense collapses under the pattern of abuse. A state that uses family arrests as leverage, runs undeclared overseas police stations, pressures expatriates to return, and treats religious or cultural behavior as risk has moved far beyond ordinary law enforcement. It is not protecting public order, it is protecting CCP control. The Information Operations Bridge. The quiet power of the system lies in its metrics. A fusion platform makes populations legible, much like a corporate dashboard visualizes a supply chain. It breaks life into variables. Then it highlights anomalies, and accuracy becomes secondary. A flawed classifier can still be useful if it helps allocate state attention. A false positive becomes a justification. That is why the Chinese regime's model should not be confused with a policing system. It is an information operations model turned inward first. It identifies audiences, segments behavior, tests pressure, measures response, and refines intervention. In Xinjiang and Tibet, the intervention takes the form of policing and social control. Overseas, it becomes shadow policing, coerced repatriation, and pressure through families or community networks. Online, the same logic points toward distribution, suppression, amplification, and behavioral shaping. This is why part 4 of this series matters. China's model shows how a state can convert daily life into tasks. It does not require perfect truth, and the result is a political system that does not merely punish dissent after it appears. It tries to detect, shape, isolate, and preempt the conditions from which dissent might emerge. That becomes the bridge to TikTok and other recommender platforms. The point is not that TikTok is an integrated joint operations platform. The point is that the CCP has already shown how it approaches data-rich systems, identify patterns, segment populations, test interventions, measure responses, and convert the results into action. On social platforms, it can become distribution, amplification, suppression, and political influence. The CCP's proof-by-dashboard model is the bureaucratic automation of coercion. It watches, sorts, pressures, and adapts. It does not stop at the border. It reaches into identity, religion, culture, diaspora life, and political speech. The same party that built dashboards for control at home has every incentive to exploit dashboards for influence abroad. Next, the distribution layer, how persuasion systems create their own proof by dashboard, and why engagement metrics can become administrative justification for political outcomes.